This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll be giving away some River Dog tickets coming up here in just a little bit. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. Baker Roofing has been in business for over 100 years, and they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. They provide residential and commercial roofing, and in 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. Give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can also check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. So I had promoted earlier, and this is why I usually try to refrain from promoting guests. But I promoted that Elliot Johnson, former Atlanta Brave, was going to join us here at this time today, much like he was scheduled to join us at this time yesterday. But apparently we have to reschedule once again and try to do it next week. So Elliot Johnson will not be joining us today. Should we give him a third chance? I know baseball, right? Three strikes, you're out. This is now strike number two, back-to-back days that he, at least this time, he reached out to us. Yesterday we just got ghosted. Today he did reach out and say, hey, can we reschedule to next week? Should he get a third chance? I don't know. Now, Joe, you spoke to him. Did he sound, like, remorseful? Did he sound bad?
Yeah, he actually did.
Okay, all right.
I would say it's a full count.
Okay. He's got one last chance. Something better happen, and I better be positive next week. So we'll see if we can get Elliot on the show next week, and hopefully he doesn't strike out. That's why I try not to promote, and it'd be good for the show if you could, but I don't want to promote something and then not have it come through. I don't want to say, hey, he's coming on the show today, and then, you know, then they don't come on. It makes me look like a liar. So I try not to promote, or if I do, maybe not use a name or whatever it may be, but Elliot Johnson now got a full count after he stood us up the last 2 days. So we'll see if we can link up with him after the weekend, next week. So instead of talking with Elliot here, you know, we have game five of the, oh, you know what, before I get to this, actually, we have game five of the NBA Finals tomorrow. I want to talk about that in just a moment. But before we get to that, you know, we did have our wrestling wrap-up yesterday. But, Joe, I know you were doing some investigative work. You were doing some Big J journalism about the WWE coming to town in September. And I guess there was some concern that that could be in doubt now with some news that had come out.
Actually, there was some wrestling websites had reported that the September 17th SmackDown, which is to come from Atlanta, has been canceled. Uh-huh. And I contacted someone I know at the North Charleston Coliseum, and they said it's not having any effect on the September 18th show here. Everything is a go.
That's good.
Full steam ahead.
All right. So if you're hoping to see the WWE here in September, there you go. Still on.
You could still see them.
That's right.
And we might have to try and score an interview or two.
For sure. Oh, and the Citadel announced their schedule. And they're playing a night game. It's their one night game of the year is that night. So there goes my doubleheader. The Citadel announced their football schedule, the times of their football games this fall. They already had the opponents. And that's the one night game all year, at least so far. We haven't gotten all the times for some of their road games. But for their home schedule, it's the only night game is that night of WWE. So I can't be there. Otherwise, I'd tell you, not only do we need to score some tickets, put me ringside. I want their blood and sweat spraying on me. But I can't be there, unfortunately. You know, although with 2020, after what we just went through with all this remote broadcasting, you just broadcast the Citadel game from like the first row of the WWE night of their wrestling.
So we'll just have to go with plan B.
Which is?
Which means Bobby's going to have his radio, you know, his earphones on. And he's going to be ringside at the Coliseum probably.
I wish if we were on air, if for whatever reason they did a wrestling event during the week and during the day, right? Like they were wrestling from 12 to 3. I would send Bobby there, and then we would check in like maybe every segment or a couple times an hour with a live update. Bobby would be giving us the blow-by-blow of what's going on with the wrestling.
I'm surprised he didn't talk this week about his girl Shotzi Blackheart debuting on SmackDown last week.
Oh, I'm sure
she even rode the tank to the ring.
Oh.
Drove the tank.
Sure, he's very excited. I'm shocked it didn't open the show. So, anyways, that's our big J journalism around here. And that's the investigating we do when it comes to wrestling in the Lowcountry. Game 5 of the NBA Finals is tomorrow night. And I heard Mike Greenberg earlier. In fact, I think it's how he opened his show earlier today here on Greeny, which you can hear right here on ESPN Radio, where he was asking the question, what's more important, momentum or home court for an NBA playoff series or just in the NBA in general? And I would say it's certainly home court. I don't really think it's much of a question. The Suns had the momentum, but then they had to go to Milwaukee, where Milwaukee had the home court and the Suns lost both. And their momentum be damned. And then Milwaukee now has the momentum, but they're going to Phoenix tomorrow night on the road, having to try to find a way to win. And I actually would pick the Suns to win the game. And I believe the Suns are favored to win that game. And I think home court will be more important tomorrow than this perceived momentum. The Suns' momentum meant nothing to begin the series. I don't think the Bucks' momentum means a whole lot right now. If they were home, well, that's one thing. Then you continue this role. Hey, we've already won the last two here at home. Let's keep it going. But now you're going on the road. Couple of days in between, you have to travel, you're going into Phoenix. That quote-unquote momentum doesn't mean a whole lot to me. You know, in baseball, the old expression is that your momentum's only as good as your next day's starting pitcher. So it's the same idea. Like, you could have all the momentum in the world, but if your pitcher is not going to have his A stuff that night, what good is it? It's like in football. You could be on a winning streak, have all the momentum in the world, sure, but if your quarterback, right, is having an off night or it's just a bad matchup for you, momentum's not going to will you to victory. But the home court advantage, the fans shooting on your own rims, that could. Because in basketball, forget momentum. Your momentum's only as good as home court the next game. The Suns started 2-0, and we thought, they're winners. They're champions already. They're sweeping this series. Then the Bucks even the series, and we thought, oh, they're champions, right? Giannis is getting his ring this year. And now, if the Suns win Game 5 tomorrow, I'm sure the conversations will be, oh, Chris Paul, bounce back. Phoenix, they're going to win. And it's just how we are with our big reactions. But home court advantage is huge in the NBA, and mainly in this series, because this series comes down to the role players. There are not enough superstars that you can count on night in and night out, regardless of venue. Here, you're counting on those role players who play much better at home than on the road. And we've seen that play out in this series, right? Giannis tried to carry the Bucks to a victory on the road by himself. He scored 40 points in Game 2 and still lost. When he came home for Game 3, he scored 40 points. But since it was at home, that was enough for a win. Guys stepped up. The Suns didn't play as well. Devin Booker tried to carry the team the other night in Game 4, scored over 40 points, but it was on the road. They lost. Other guys did not step up or play well. Chris Middleton did play really well because he, in that case, was playing at home. So it comes down to the role players, which is why for Milwaukee, the pressure is on guys like Chris Middleton, or really should say a guy like Chris Middleton. I think Middleton specifically. Drew Holiday will be counted on defensively to continue to do a good job on Chris Paul, but Chris Middleton is the guy offensively that needs to do a good job tonight or tomorrow night to help the Bucks win on the road. And on Phoenix side of things, the pressure for them is on Chris Paul, because tomorrow night is really, for all intents and purposes, probably the series. Whoever wins Game 5 of an even series goes on to win that whole series over 80% of the time. And in this case, if the Suns win, well, then they just have to split the next two, with Game 7 being at home. Or if the Bucks win, well, then they're returning home, where they're very good, already with a series lead and a chance to put it away in Game 6 at home. And Chris Paul, why the pressure is on CP3 specifically for the Suns is because he played terrible in Game 4. One of the worst games he's ever played. And it came in a moment when the Suns had a chance to take a 3-1 lead, which would put away the series, because only one team has ever erased a 3-1 deficit in the finals. And as improbable as that was, it was led by LeBron James. And I don't think Giannis has that same ability to do what LeBron did that year. Granted, the Suns aren't as good as the Warriors, but I don't think Giannis would, if they were in that situation, be able to lead back the Bucks down 3-1. And Chris Paul let that opportunity slither away, as he played awful and the Bucks came back and erased that fourth quarter deficit and even the series. And now, if Chris Paul responds by also not playing well in Game 5, and that leads to the Suns losing this series, then everything changes for him. that we went from talking about, oh, up 2-0 in the finals, finally going to get his ring, top 5 point guard all time, and we would switch to, ooh, blew another series, didn't play well in the biggest moments, still doesn't have a championship. The one finals appearance he would have would be, in this hypothetical situation, a losing effort in which Chris Paul did not play well in the second half of the series. It'd almost be worse than not getting there at all. Because if he never got to the NBA Finals, at least you could wonder and just say, like, well, injuries, right? He never had the chance to play in the NBA Finals. Now he's in the NBA Finals. Finally has that chance, first time in his career. And his numbers are getting worse each game. And if he doesn't play well tomorrow night in front of the home crowd and they find a way to lose, they being Phoenix, and they fall down 3-2 and they eventually lose this series, right? That'd be a big mark on the Chris Paul legacy. And if the Suns don't win this series, add it to the series blown in Chris Paul's playoff career. He blew a 3-1 lead before. He blew a 2-0 lead. This would be another 2-0 lead. Wouldn't be a good way for his first and probably only NBA Finals to go. So the pressure for Phoenix is on Chris Paul. He has the most to lose. I said that at the beginning of this series. Devin Booker, hypothetically speaking, you would think he has plenty more opportunities. Right, he's young. He's played well. DeAndre Ayton, same idea, is 22 years old. You'd like to think he'll have plenty more chances. Chris Paul, this is probably his only chance. And on Milwaukee's side, their best chance to win this series, of course, they're going to have to win a game in Phoenix to do so. And in order to win that game in Phoenix, it's going to take a good effort from Chris Middleton. Because we've seen Giannis can do his thing. It's still not enough. He's not the X factor. The Bucks won the other night when Giannis was slowed down. They lost when Giannis had a great game in Phoenix. It's not about Giannis. The Bucks can win even when he doesn't play well. The Bucks can lose even when he does play well. But it's Chris Middleton. I told you on the air yesterday, the Bucks are 5-0 this postseason when Middleton goes for 30-plus points. And when he doesn't, right, obviously the record's a lot worse. They were 8-2 in the regular season when he went for over 30 points. Middleton is the one closer tied to the outcome for Milwaukee. When he plays well, the Bucks win. When he doesn't play well, the Bucks don't win. In a sense, he's almost more valuable than Giannis because Giannis could have those great games and still not matter in the outcome. Or he can have a poor game and not matter in the outcome. But for Middleton, the outcomes are more closely tied to his performances, right? Like if you were graphing it, the wins or losses and how many points they score, Giannis's would be all over the map. The two data points would be crossing and commingling and everything because, you know, they win when he doesn't necessarily play well sometimes, and they've lost plenty of games when he played well. The Bucks were 15-10 this year when Giannis went over 30 points. But Chris Middleton, the two would be matched up perfectly. They'd have the same movements that whenever he plays well, they win. Whenever he doesn't, they lose. It'd look the same. If you put these two data points on a graph, right, and graphed it, you plotted the data for wins, losses, correlating to point totals, Middleton's, it looked like the same line, just one line drawn twice. When he plays well, they win. When he doesn't, they lose. He hasn't played well on the road. And if the Bucks want to win this playoff, this NBA Finals, they're going to need to win a road game, and they're going to need Chris Middleton to play well enough in order to do so. All right, coming up, I got we have some audio to get to from both the Big 12 with their media days this week, and also I was talking about the shift last hour. I've dug up the Rob Manfred audio that was missing. I found it. And we'll get to that coming up. Circle back to the conversation about the shift and hear from Major League Baseball's commissioner. Plus a funny story or a funny anecdote from John Smoltz as well. Get to all that coming up. Oh, and also, we have to give away some River Dog tickets. Let's do that now. We were supposed to be joined by Elliot Johnson. That was going to lead into the ticket giveaway. We'll try to get Elliot on the show next week. But it doesn't mean we can't give these tickets away anyways. So I have a pair of tickets for next Tuesday. Actually, I take that back. You know what? This is not next Tuesday. This is the following Tuesday. So you got plenty of time, which is good because you have to come pick up these tickets here at the station. Now, I know it's a little far in advance. Maybe you don't know your plans, but it's a Tuesday night. What else you got going on? Right? You could go to a game. So I got a pair of tickets here for the River Dogs and Columbia Fireflies Tuesday, July 27th. So not this upcoming Tuesday, the following Tuesday, a week and a half from now. But I got a pair of tickets. It's a 7:05 game. Third caller now, the tickets are yours. You'll have plenty of time to come pick them up at the radio station and go see the River Dogs when they have their homestand in a week and a half. 843-721-9500. 843-721-9500. Third caller gets two tickets to Tuesday, July 27th game for the River Dogs. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You did a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You're always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do. Because, you know, I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Dolphin that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours in your pango.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Got out of town on a boat from the Southern Island. Sailing to reach before a following sea. She was making for the trades on the outside and the downhill run to Papeete.
Coming up, a ridiculous change in the Big 12. Get to that here. Coming up on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Congratulations to our winner, Dave in Mount Pleasant, winning a pair of tickets to a River Dogs game later this month at Joe Riley Park. We got more tickets to give away probably next week for the River Dogs at home. They're home the rest of this weekend, and then next Friday is their celebrity softball game with former MLB players, and then they got a homestand after that. Best record in all of minor league baseball. So congratulations to all our winners this week. Enjoy the games out there at the River Dogs. All right, a couple things I want to do here. We have some sound to get to as well. I do want to circle back to what I mentioned earlier about the shift, this idea that Rob Manfred is considering banning the shift in baseball after this year. And Manfred was talking about some rule changes at the All-Star break and then went on the radio this week, Sirius XM, and was talking about the shift. And I had mentioned the audio last hour when we were talking about it at the time, but I went back and saw that I dated the audio the wrong year. That's what happened. That's why we couldn't find it. I put 2020. Why do we want to remember that? Why would we want to pretend like we're still in 2020? So anyways, we now have rescued the audio. Here was Rob Manfred on Sirius XM talking about this idea that's picking up steam of banning the shift in Major League Baseball.
People feel that shifts have changed the game in a way that is not positive, really affected left-handed hitters and offense. And when they look at it, they say this is not like changing the number of innings in a game. The change would create a visual where people see baseball the way they were used to seeing it, as opposed to having a short fielder in right field. So, yeah, there's sentiment in favor of it. There's no question about that.
That was Rob Manfred. I think that's a bunch of nonsense. And I referenced some of those points earlier because I remember what he said. But the idea that there hasn't been a positive, for who? Who would say that? The hitters would say the shift hasn't been a positive, but I think the managers or the defense or the pitchers would say that the shifts have been a positive for them. So just say it hasn't been a positive. It hasn't had a positive effect on the hitters, because we know in baseball that's all they care about, right? The hitters cheat to win a World Series. Oh, that's okay. A little slap on the wrist. They could keep playing. The pitchers are cheating with the spider tack, and it's like, ooh, full investigation. You get caught, you're out for 10 days. We're checking you after every inning. Nobody was checking those trash cans in Houston, though. Now, we know that all these sports leagues love offense, but just acknowledge that. Just say, hey, look, our hitters aren't good enough to provide the offense we want, so we're going to try to make it easier for them by banning the shift. Because the other point he made was that it's really affected left-handed batters. Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe you learn to hit the other way. And the third part he mentioned was the visual, which has to be one of the lamest reasons I've ever heard. I don't think I've ever heard anybody complain like, oh, I can't watch baseball. Well, why not? Because the third baseman every once in a while goes and plays in shallow right field. I just can't watch it. It's not the game I grew up watching. I don't recognize it. What a lame excuse that it doesn't look like the sport that they're used to seeing. Having the third baseman at third base, the shortstop at shortstop, except for the fact, again, that shifts have been used for 100 years. But you're right. It doesn't look like baseball anymore. Right? Except for the fact that a baseball card was created honoring the Ted Williams shift where they put 6 of 7 fielders on the right side. But you're right, right? This doesn't look like baseball anymore. I don't know what this is I'm watching, but it's not baseball, all because a team will shift knowing that a hitter's going to hit the ball over there. Where I come from, that's called good defense. Just like in football, if a team is going to run the football a bunch and you stack the box, to me, that's good defense. That's good coaching. In basketball, if you're facing a team that can't shoot the three ball and you pack in a zone and force them to shoot from the outside, that's coaching. That's good basketball. And in baseball, if you know this guy always hits it to the right side, he's a pull hitter, let's put another fielder over there to handle it, that's good coaching. That's what sports are supposed to be about. And then the hitter has to make the adjustment. That's especially what baseball's about. It's just a game of adjustments. You hit the pitcher's fastball for a home run. Next time up, he's not throwing you that fastball. Here comes his breaking pitch. Now you better adjust and get ready and know, oh, he's not giving me a fastball this time. That's all baseball is. It's a series of adjustments. And the defense, the manager, they adjust. Hey, this guy always hits it to the right side. Let's adjust and be able to handle that. Now the hitter has to adjust. Oh, hey, look at that. They shifted. Let me adjust and hit it the other way. Something so challenging to do nowadays. It's silly to me. Right, we always complain that, oh, we're making things so easy for everyone, and then turn around and say, hey, it's too hard for these hitters. We have to make it easier. We have to ban the shift. Brad on Twitter said two things that baseball needs to change. Have a universal DH. Yes, that's right. And Brad's an NL fan. He's come over to the right side. Universal DH. And he also said, get rid of Rob Manfred. Yeah, I've never been a fan of Rob Manfred as commissioner of Major League Baseball. And I've always let that be known. Brad continued to say, I've never understood why players don't bunt against the shift. The other teams leave the side of the field open, bunt the ball down that side of the field, and they won't shift on you next time. Right, exactly. I don't know why we have to make changes because the hitters can't handle this. They're giving you a whole field, by the way. Right, imagine that. Imagine that thought process. I always love the line from Moneyball, and I reference this a lot. But when David Justice, in the movie, I don't know if this is accurate or not, but it's in the movie, and a lot of that movie's not accurate, but there's the great scene of David Justice. He's being a pain, right? He's not, like, really happy being in Oakland. And Billy Beane's talking to him at the batting cage, and David Justice, he's got kind of an attitude. He doesn't want to be bothered. He doesn't want to hear it from Billy Beane. He just left the Yankees, who are winning all sorts of World Series, and he goes to Oakland, right? It's like a demotion. And I love the line that Billy Beane, played by Brad Pitt, uses on David Justice to help him snap out of it. When he tells him, yeah, you know what? The Yankees are still paying your salary, which tells you that they'd rather pay you to play against them than play for you. Right, so come on down from your high horse. And it's not exactly what he said, but that's the gist. I'm paraphrasing. Now, you can have your little attitude. You can think you're better than our organization, but do you realize that a team is still paying you to play for us instead of play for them? Right? And it's a similar idea that do you realize when you step into that batter's box, you can complain about the shift all you want, but do you realize they're giving you half of the field wide open? It tells you what they think about you. You're that small of a threat. Like, yeah, this guy's only a pull hitter. He can't hit it the other way. He only hits it to this one portion of the field. He's not capable of hitting it to all fields. It's like when they intentionally walk the batter in front of you, and certain guys will really take that as a disrespect. Like, you rather face me than that guy? And they'll go up there, and there's certain athletes that have great stats following an intentional walk. Like, Mike Lowell was one of those guys, a random player. Mike Lowell, they would always walk like David Ortiz when he was playing in Boston, Mike Lowell. They'd always walk. He would bat fifth, and they'd walk Ortiz or Manny Ramirez, and Lowell's stats were always great after intentional walks because he was a good hitter, but also it kind of puts a chip on your shoulder. It's offensive. Like, you'd rather face me than that guy, and it should be the same idea with the shift. Like, you're giving me half the field? You respect me that little? Hit it the other way. Silly to ban the shifts. And then we got this anecdote that's completely unrelated, but from John Smoltz. I heard an interview with John Smoltz the other day on Fox Sports Radio, and they were talking about walk-up music. You know, when pitchers come out of the bullpen or when batters come to the plate. And here was John Smoltz talking about the genesis of his walk-up song when he was the closer of the Braves.
Did you have music when you came out when you were closer?
Funny story is, no, I didn't. I didn't believe in it. I thought it was stupid. It was the birth of it. Like, this was the literal birth of music for players. And I didn't understand it. So I said, just play whatever you want because I don't care. I'm not thinking about it, and I just want to get three outs. Well, then one day I came into a game, and they obviously didn't think I was coming in because Dancing Queen was playing on the loudspeakers. And the on-deck circle, the guy on the on-deck circle was laughing, and I had to cover my face. And because of Dancing Queen, which I like, ABBA, you know, I'm a big fan,
yeah, sure.
I ended up getting a thunderstruck out of that because I said, okay, you kind of indirectly made your point. Now I need a song. And so that's how Thunderstruck was birthed.
John Smoltz. Hey, I got nothing against ABBA. I'll tell you what, I'll come out of that bullpen to Dancing Queen, no problem. Now, that's not very intimidating. It's the same thing like when we play our wrestling themes around here. It's the same thing. You need an intimidating song when you come out to the ring.
Yeah, gee, I wonder where those walk-up themes came from.
Yeah, from the wrestling world? Lenny Dykstra always claims to be the first one in baseball. He claims that he started it in baseball. And I forget the song that he first used, you know, like 30 years ago. But nowadays, I don't think he can believe anything that Lenny says, so who knows. But he always takes credit for like having the first walk-up song for a baseball player. And back in the day, he said originally it was a different song every at-bat. Now, I worked in minor league baseball, and let me tell you how much of a pain it is, stupid walk-up songs. I can't tell you the amount of times I was in the clubhouse before the game, or I'd get a text like minutes before the game. Right? Hey, can you change my walk-up song? And it would be guys who would, you know, you find a new song, like the flavor of the week, whatever song you like. Like, ooh, that's a good one. Let me change it to that. And there would be certain hitters who would use so many. We had to put, like, a limit on it. Like, you get four walk-ups all year. You can't be changing your song every day because then we have to go download it, and we have to edit it, and we have to clip it to the right part that they want, and we have to put it in our little system, and they have to play it. And I'll get a text right before the game, and so I tell them, like, sorry, we'll get it for you tomorrow, but, you know, concentrate on the game. That was another thing. The amount of complaints about the music during batting practice and the music during the game. It's like, you know what? Focus on your at-bats. Don't worry about the music going on in the stadium because you're not the only person in the stadium. We got fans that we have to try to entertain. And don't worry about the music playing pregame. Focus on the at-bat. But that was the number one thing I heard from players when I was in minor league baseball. It was always about the walk-up songs. Now, with all that said, AC/DC, you can't go wrong with AC/DC. And Trevor Hoffman used Hell's Bells by AC/DC. Mariano had Enter Sandman by Metallica. Those are the two most iconic walk-up songs or walk-out songs for the closers. AC/DC, you can't go wrong there. But I do enjoy some Dancing Queen. I got to be honest. I like some ABBA songs. I've admitted before. I watched Mamma Mia not too long ago. Well, I like ABBA's music. And it became an unintentional thing that just the way it worked out, every time right before a Citadel pregame show for basketball, we always used to end on an ABBA song. And I got to tell you, it would get me, you know, you would want that song to pump you up going on into your broadcast. And every once in a while, about half of the games that just happened to work out, it was ABBA. For some reason, they love ABBA around that time over on our sister station, The City. And I didn't hate it. I could get down to a little Dancing Queen leading into a broadcast. Not bad. I'd come out of the bullpen to a little Dancing Queen. Get the people dancing, get up on their feet, because that's one of those songs, you hear it. You may not like ABBA, but you'd probably be tapping your foot. I like Dancing Queen.
Now, when they say, just play whatever the flavor of the week is,
yeah.
Did you play Flavor of the Week by American Hi-Fi?
No. No, I didn't mean literally, right? They were just whatever song they liked. Like, oh, they hear a new song on the radio, and they think, oh, this would be good. And then a new song comes out, or somebody shows them a song. Like, hey, you hear this new song from whoever, Kanye. Oh, that'd be a good walk-up, and they'd be changing it every. It's like, enough already.
And who used Enter Sandman?
Enter Sandman was Mariano Rivera.
Okay, somewhere the Sandman, the wrestler.
Yes.
And Virginia Tech's football players are saying, yeah, that's not very original.
No, most of these aren't. But that was a good one for Mo. Hell's Bells for Trevor Hall. Those are the only two. I couldn't name you another walkout for a closer. And I'm not a Braves fan, so I don't know about John Smoltz. I could not tell you that John Smoltz, what was it, Thunderstruck? I had no idea that was his song. I don't know if that was a thing.
That was used in the movie Varsity Blues.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, Varsity Blues. I was trying to think of the scene. But yes.
Yeah, it's during one of the game scenes.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's a good song. Like I said, you can't go wrong with AC/DC as a walkout song. Now, people always ask me, like, oh, what would be your walk-up? I don't know. It'd be too hard to choose. Because as much as I criticize those players, I would be pretty similar. That I love so many songs, and I hear a song, and they're like, oh, this would be perfect for that moment. I, too, would probably want to use as many songs as I could instead of coming up to the same song all year. But then when I'm in the other situation, when I'm in charge of getting all those songs, I would always tell the players, focus on your at-bats. Don't worry about the music. Don't worry about the song. And then you'd get the guys who would wait to get into the batter's box because they wanted to hear a certain part of the song. And that was always annoying as well. Like, just get in the box and bat. Don't worry about it. But they had to hear, like, the guitar solo, or they had to hear a certain lyric before they had to get into the right frame of mind before they could go bat. I'll tell you, at least in minor league baseball, those hitters love their walk-up songs. Second half of the baseball season begins tonight. The Atlanta Braves are under 500. 17 teams all time have gone from under 500 at the midway point to making the playoffs. The Braves have done it before, 1991, of course, that great turnaround. The Braves were one game under 500 that year, just like they are this year at the All-Star break. And then the Braves went 55-28 after the All-Star break in 91 to go all the way to the World Series. And similar to this year, right, pitching was kind of disappointing. Guys turned it on. But I don't think there's a John Smoltz on that staff, on this current staff of the Braves. Right, some guy, Tom Glavin. I don't think they have those type of arms currently. Maybe. All right, maybe like an Ian Anderson will really turn it on here second half and be great. But I don't think the talent is the same, at least with the pitching staff now, as it was in 91. Also, many point to Otis Nixon as that missing piece. Now, Otis was acquired at the beginning of the season, but they got him in a trade. I don't think Jock Peterson, acquired yesterday by the Braves, will be this year's Otis Nixon. But you never know. I mean, you could draw some parallels. They were one game under 500 that year at the All-Star break. They're one game under 500 now. 17 teams have done it all time. And the most recent one was the Cubs 4 years ago, who the Cubs were the last team to do it, be under 500 at the All-Star break and make the playoffs. They were the last team to do it in 2017, 17 teams all time. The Braves did it once back in 91. So that's what this year's Braves team will try to do. And it begins with a big series against the Tampa Bay Rays this weekend. The Rays, then the Padres. And that will decide your season right there. And then you get the Phillies and five against the Mets. And we'll know by the end of this month if the Braves could try to pull off some sort of second-half comeback. But these next 2 weeks, big games on the schedule, some tough teams. We'll see what Atlanta is capable of doing and how aggressive they may be or how many moves they'll make leading up to the trade deadline. All right, I teased this earlier. When we come back, I was complaining. I was ranting about removing the shift in baseball. Something happened to the Big 12 this week that I also think is just as silly. And we'll get to that next. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
ESPN 98.9 has made it easier than ever to listen to your favorite sports. Head to the Apple or Google Play Store and download the free listening app right now for access to all your favorite shows and Gamecock sports. Download the app, listen, and enjoy. This free app is just another way to stay connected to Charleston Sports Station, ESPN 98.9.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Moore Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Looks like things may be a go in New York tonight, so that's good news. And maybe I'll cut Major League Baseball some slack for yesterday's postponement. That game will be made up in August. And also for the Braves, they start the second half of the season with the Rays. No Jock Peterson in tonight's lineup. So I'm going to have to wait a little bit longer to see his Braves debut. And we'll see how aggressive, in either direction, buy or sell, the Braves become over the next couple of weeks before the deadline. I think you try to do what you can this year and then regroup next year. Right? You don't sell off any pieces. I don't think you also get too aggressive unless they make a real run here in the next week or two. And see what happens this year and then regroup for next year, because there's plenty of talent here. It's just has been a bit of a doomed season for Atlanta this year. I want to tell you about Lively's dry cleaners with their to-go service. They can pick up or deliver right to your home or office now. And they handle shirts, suits, and casual wear, as well as curtains, comforters, and regular old household laundry. Call or text them at 843-377-6994 to schedule a free pickup. You can even track your dry cleaning to see exactly when it'll be ready or delivered. And the best part, mention that you heard about Lively's right here on ESPN Radio Charleston and get 20% off your next order. Lively's dry cleaners now with their to-go service. You can always join the conversation throughout the afternoons, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Lou is with us. Lou, what's going on? How are you?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Doing well. What's up?
All right. I'm got my fingers crossed about baseball tonight.
Yes.
Yankees, Red Sox.
That's right.
You know, I couldn't get the Yankees website up either.
Wow,
coincidence, I guess.
Yes. Everything's falling apart over there.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I assume that the Elliot Johnson that you're trying to get, and I hope you keep trying, even if, you know, three times is too, you know, almost too many tries. I assume that's the Elliot Johnson that was on the River Dogs roughly approximately 2004.
I think it was, I think that was the right year. Yeah, he played for the River Dogs, so that was probably the
same team with Delmon Young and some other good ones.
Yeah, that sounds right, yeah.
That was a team that that year they went to Greensboro one night, and the team, the River Dogs, hit 8 home runs.
Oh, wow.
Which at the time was a South Atlantic League record.
Uh-huh.
Elliot Johnson hit 3 of them.
Oh, wow.
And his home runs were in the first inning, second inning, and third inning.
Huh.
He was hitting either leadoff or second. He was high in the order, so he got his at-bats that night. And he hit 3 home runs in 3 consecutive innings to start the game.
Wow.
At the beginning.
Yeah, that's remarkable. We'll definitely ask about it if we could get him on next week. We'll see. Hopefully,
yeah,
a few times a charm.
Yeah. And another thing about the intentional walks and guys taking it personal and then having a, you know, getting big hits.
Mm-hmm.
One year, I think 1980, when Rick Cerrone was his first year with the Yankees after they had acquired Cerrone from Toronto, I believe, in the Chris Chambliss trade.
Yeah.
Which eventually got Chambliss directly to the Braves. Chris Chambliss was on the Toronto for about an hour and a half. Anyway, so Rick Cerrone's now on the Yankees, and Sparky Anderson is managing Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And he twice in that season, he twice walked Rick Cerrone to load the bases, and Cerrone hit grand slam home runs.
Oh, wow.
That's as extreme an example of what you were talking about.
Yes.
As I can think of.
Yeah. No, that's a good one, though. Some guys really take that to heart, and either it's a coincidence or they get real locked in. They take that personally, and they make you pay for wanting to face them instead of whoever's batting ahead of them.
And when Cerrone did it twice, you know, with the grand slams, it was both times it was Sparky Anderson who walked him.
Oh, wow.
I mean, walked somebody to get to Cerrone, I mean.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, so either that was just a good matchup for him or he did not like the idea of wanting to face him.
Yeah. So. Okay, have a good weekend.
Hey, you too. Appreciate it, Lou. Now, we'll give Elliot Johnson a third try, I guess, next week. I never heard that story or knew about that, but that's something, homering in each of the first 3 innings. So we'll try to get him on the show next week. The Big 12 is having their media days this week. The SEC, they have theirs next week. We'll get to anything that comes of it. I'm not all that big into media days, but every once in a while you get something. You know, like earlier we talked about Mike Gundy cutting his mullet. That's a big story in the Big 12. Mike Gundy has gone without the mullet, or the slide, as they call it these days. So that's a big takeaway this week at the Big 12 Media Days. The other one also doesn't have to do so much with the teams, the new players, the rosters, whatever it may be. Instead, it's this idea of trying to ban the horns down symbol. The coordinator of officials for the Big 12 was explaining this, and I grabbed the audio, but then it didn't work. There was some sort of issue. When you try to get videos online, sometimes it's not on both channels. It's just on, you know, either in the left ear or the right ear, and then that doesn't really go into our system very well. So anyways, could not get the actual audio, but I listened to it, and the coordinator of officials told the media there that doing the horns down sign to the players of Texas would be a penalty. If you do it towards the fans, he said that won't be an issue. Like if you're on the sideline and you do it with your back towards the field, not a problem. But if you do it towards a player or towards the other sideline, then that is a penalty, which to me is just ridiculous. You either outlaw it completely or you don't. I don't know what the difference is. But they said it's taunting, right? They consider it taunting. So it's going to be, they want to ban it. It's going to be a penalty. Now, he did leave the door open, and he referenced this at the end of the clip. The Big 12 coordinator of officials did say at the very end, he reiterated, now, what did I just say? Possibly. Because he did say it possibly could. Right? That they could possibly lead to a penalty. Doesn't mean that, I guess, every time it will, but it does. You'd almost rather him say it for sure one way or another. Either it will or it won't. Not possibly, because then you know what's going to happen this year. It's going to depend on the situation. Sometimes they won't throw a flag. Sometimes they probably will. I'm sure we'll see a flag this year. And it goes back to what I was talking about the shifts. I think that's a very soft move if Major League Baseball bans the shifts. I know our hitters, they can't hit it well enough. To all fields, we have to make it easier. I think that's soft. I think this is soft as well. I think this would be ridiculous. If you're actually going to throw flags or call penalties for the horns down, come on, what are we doing here? You're not harming anybody. You're not giving the middle finger. You're not saying anything about their mother. I mean, come on. You can't give that symbol. And vice versa, same idea. If you do the regular horns, then that should be a penalty as well. Right? Because that's taunting. Same idea. If you want to, you can't allow one and not the other. It's the same idea. You want to tell me, well, you know, they're mocking. The horns down is mocking them. So that's why. I don't know how you could differentiate. And then that gets silly. A little hand gesture. You want to be throwing penalties on that. I got no problem with it. I don't know if the players, the school, the program, if they have a real problem with it, or if this is just the conference and some angry fans out there complaining. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's soft. I think it'd be silly. I think it'd be real dumb. You're watching a big game on a Saturday afternoon. You're watching, I don't know, Oklahoma, Texas, and we're getting a flag called because somebody did the horns down sign. Come on. Ridiculous. So the big takeaways out of the Big 12 press week this week is that Mike Gundy cut off his mullet, and that horns down may be a penalty this year. That's what I took away from the Big 12 media week. I'm all for cutting off that mullet, Mike Gundy, but not penalizing the horns down. I think that's silly. We'll wrap up your Friday when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
What a funky finish to your Friday afternoon as we get ready for the weekend. The More Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, don't worry. You can always catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston. However you listen to your podcast, just search ESPN Radio Charleston. You can also find the show on demand online, charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. Or download our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And you can listen to the show both live and also on demand there through the app. And, of course, you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online, again, at charlestonsportsradio.com through our free mobile app. Search ESPN Charleston. Online at, as I said, charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio or your smart speaker as well. So many ways to listen to the Morrow Midday Show, live or on demand. You can catch up at any time. And appreciate listeners checking in from seven different states and multiple countries here on this Friday afternoon as we head into the weekend. Last segment, I briefly touched on this idea that the horns down symbol, when you taunt, quote-unquote, taunt Texas, could turn into a penalty this year. Now, Joe, you are a Oklahoma fan. What would you think if horns down became a penalty in the Big 12 this year?
Really?
I had a similar reaction. I think it's silly.
Yeah.
I think it's soft. And if you ban it, right, then you can maybe probably make the case that the regular horn sign is also taunting. If turning it upside down is taunting Texas, are they, I don't know. You get into a little bit of a gray area, I guess. If they're actually taunting their opponent or just celebrate. Regardless, it's ridiculous. Shouldn't be a penalty. Hey, the Open Championship's going on. Round two right now. Did you get up at 3 a.m. to watch some of these guys get out there on the course? Louis Oosthuizen is leading right now at 11 under. Colin Morikawa is 9 under. Jordan Spieth, 8 under. Those are the top three as they play on here in round number two. I love the pettiness. Speaking of pettiness, like the horns down, I love the pettiness of the golf world where DeChambeau called out his equipment. Right, a good carpenter never blames his tools. DeChambeau blamed his driver yesterday, caused some problems with the company. And I love that Brooks Koepka, referenced in an interview, randomly said he loves his driver and also tweeted that he's driving into the weekend. I love this pettiness. I love Brooks always poking the bear of Bryson DeChambeau. And DeChambeau kind of exposing himself, showing maybe why Brooks Koepka has a problem with him in the first place, with all this silly complaining and rubbing people the wrong way. We'll see what happens over the weekend with the Open Championship and talk about it next week. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we have to say goodbye. We'll say hello again Monday at noon. Catch the podcast if you missed anything from the show this week. Enjoy the sports weekend, and we'll talk to you Monday. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.